Ready? And Hazael, king of Syria, oppressed Israel all the days of Jehoahaz. But the Lord was gracious to them and had compassion on them and regarded them because of His covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Boy, God has a good memory, doesn't He? And would not yet destroy them or cast them from His presence. That's over the beginner of this nation, you understand. God's just showing His mercy. Now, Hazael, king of Syria, died. Then Ben-Hadad, his son, reigned in his place. And Jehoash, the son of Jehoahaz, recaptured from the hand of Ben-Hadad, the son of Hazael, the cities which he had taken out of the land of Jehoahaz, his father, by war. Look at this. Three times, Joash defeated him and recaptured the cities of Israel. What did Elisha prophesy? Three times. Then we get into chapter 14. It says, in the second year of Joash, the son of Jehoahaz, king of Israel, Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, became king. Now, what will really help you is just your charts that we drew out for you on the kings. That'll keep all this separated for you. He was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned 29 years in Jerusalem. He wasn't very old when he died, was he? His mother's name was Jehoiada of Jerusalem. And he did what was right in the sight of the Lord. Yet not like his father David. He did everything as his father Joash had done. You understand David didn't have high places. You're going to find one more king. As we go through this, you'll find one more king that was that way. Looking at him today, right impressed. He did what was right in the sight of the Lord, yet not like his father David. He did everything as his father Joash had done. However, the high places were not taken away, and the people still sacrificed and burned incense on the high places. Now it happened as soon as the kingdom was established in his hand that he executed his servants who had murdered his father the king. But the children of the murderers he did not execute according to what is written in the book of the law of Moses, in which the Lord commanded, saying, fathers shall not be put to death for the children, nor shall children be put to death for the fathers, but a person shall be put to death for his own sin. So he was fair, wasn't he? He was just. You understand, when God passed judgment on the house of Jeroboam, when God passed judgment on the house of Baasha, he was wiping out all their descendants. Why was he doing that? Because of the sins of the land, to get rid of the family, right? But according to the law of Moses, the children weren't to be punished for the sins of their fathers. Let me have you remember Korah. Who was Korah? Pardon? Right.
So what? How did you get to be high priest?
Was Korah, in other words, Korah rebelled against the leadership of Moses and Aaron, right? Really against Aaron's where it was focused. Well, judgment was passed. Did his sons die?
No, they
says his sons didn't die. Pardon? God didn't pass judgment on his children. He gave everybody the opportunity to separate from them. He didn't just kill the children because for the sake of the children. Go back and read it. Make sure I'm telling the truth. Okay? So, here he executed those who murdered his father, but he didn't execute their children. Verse 7 of chapter 14 says, he killed 10,000 Edomites in the Valley of Salt and took seal of a war and called its name Jokthil to this day. Then Amaziah sent messengers to Jehoash, the son of Jehoahaz, the son of Jehu, king of Israel, saying, come, let's face one another in battle. Don't you love all these names? Aren't you glad that your mom and daddy didn't name you some of these names? They probably couldn't have said it and you couldn't have spelled it, right? So he said, come, let's face one another in battle. And Jehoash, king of Israel, sent to Amaziah, king of Judah, saying, the thistle that was in Lebanon sent to the cedar that was in Lebanon, saying, give your daughter to my son his wife. And a wild beast that was in Lebanon passed by and trampled the thistle. What do you call that, Jane? A parable. A parable that means absolutely nothing to us, right? There's another word for it. Okay. He said, you have indeed defeated Edom, and your heart has lifted you up. Glory in that and stay at home. For why should you meddle with trouble so that you fall, you and Judah, with you? You see what he's saying? In other words, here, you know, he's had a pretty good battle. He's done all right. And he said, well, I'll just, you know, I think I'll go up and fight against old Amaziah. But Amaziah, or against Joash, but Amaziah would not heed. Therefore, Jehoash, king of Israel, went out. So he and Amaziah, king of Judah, faced one another at Beth Shemesh, which belongs to Judah, and Judah was defeated by Israel. And every man fled but to his tent. That's what greed will do for you. That's what power will do for you. In the end, it'll get you. And that's exactly what happened here. I mean, he should have been satisfied in that he defeated the Edomites, but he wasn't. Judah was defeated by Israel. Every man fled to his tent. Then Jehoash, king of Israel, captured Amaziah, king of Judah, the son of Jehoash, the son of Ahaziah, at Beth Shemesh. And he went to Jerusalem, broke down the wall of Jerusalem from the gate of Ephraim to the corner gate, 400 cubits. And he took all the gold and silver and all the articles that was found in the house of the Lord and in the treasures of the king's house and hostages and returned to Samaria. That's what leadership can do. They can make or break a nation. They can help you. They can hurt you. And he certainly hurt these people, didn't he? Mm-hmm. Allegory. Now, it's more like a riddle, isn't it? Okay. Do you understand that? To where you can take that as an allegory and tell me what it means? The thistle that was in Lebanon sent to the cedar that was in Lebanon. Give your daughter to my son as a wife. And a wild beast that was in Lebanon passed by and trampled the thistle. Now, what is that? Okay. Y'all got the interpretation of that, did you?
Isn't that like the results of violating authority? I mean, the lesser is demanding of the greater. And what happens is the lesser is he snuffed out.
Exactly.
That's what I think.
That's exactly what's happening there, too. The thistle's the lesser, the cedar's the greater. Right? Judah's the lesser, Amaziah's the lesser. Okay? I still, you know, give your daughter to my son, his wife. I make an alliance is what it sounds like to me. You can write all that out for me and explain it to me then. How's that? He said, you've indeed defeated Edom. Your heart was lifted up. Glory in that. Good advice, wasn't it? We get down to verse 13. It says then, we talked about how he went on into Jerusalem and now the nation's suffering as a result of this decision. Then he takes hostages. He goes back to Samaria. Samaria is what? The capital city of Israel, right? Verse 15 says, now the rest of the acts of Jehoash, what he did, his might, and how he fought with Amaziah, king of Judah, they're not written in the book of Chronicles of the kings of Israel. So Jehoash died, rested with his fathers, and was buried in Samaria with the kings of Israel. Then Jeroboam, his son, reigned in his place. You got all these Jeroboams? Jeroboam's son of Nebat, Jeroboam's son of Joash, right? Amaziah, the son of Joash. Have you real confused now? Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, lived 15 years after the death of Jehoash, or the son of Jehoash, king of Israel. Now, the rest of the acts of Amaziah, they're not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Judah. And they formed a conspiracy against him in Jerusalem, and he fled to Lachish, but they sent after him to Lachish and killed him there. And they brought him on horses, and he was buried at Jerusalem with his father in the city of David. And all the people of Judah took Azariah, who was 16 years old. Now, another name here is Uzziah. Okay? You can probably... It was in the year the king Uzziah died. I saw the Lord high and lifted up. This is Azariah or Uzziah. Okay. He was 16 years old. He was made king instead of his father Amaziah. That is correct, right? I'm just telling you this out of the top of my head. And
Isaiah 6.
Yeah, Isaiah 6. Yes. And we'll see him as we go along. We'll see him called at a different place. We'll see him called Uzziah, I think. I'm reading different translations, and you understand I forget which translation says what.
What verse are you on right now?
Verse 20. Well, actually, that's verse 21. It's talking about Azariah, and we're just going. Verse 22 says he built Elath and restored it to Judah after the king rested with his fathers. Now you're not going to hear anything about him for a little while. They just sort of introduce you to him, and then later on we'll go back and pick up some things about him. It says in the 15th year of Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel, became king in Samaria, reigned 41 years. He did what? Evil. There's that king of Israel doing evil, right? He did evil in the sight of the Lord. He did not depart from the sins of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, who had made Israel to sin, and restored the territory of Israel from the entrance of Hamath to the Sea of Araba, according to the word of the Lord God of Israel, which he had spoken through his servant. Note this, Jonah, the son of Amittai. You just thought Jonah in the well, Nineveh, right? He prophesied more than one time. Okay? The prophet who was from Gath-Hepher. Well, the Lord saw that the affliction of Israel was very bitter. This gives you a little bit of idea of the time period. And you'll find that the prophets, it wasn't a great time period. All the prophets in the Bible, some people have the idea that this was like thousands of years or whatever. It was actually a short period of time when you think about it. And this will help you understand when he was living. Okay? Did we put that in your chart? Did we get Jonah in there? It should be with Amaziah, Jeroboam, right in that period of time. We didn't get him in there, so we're going to have to go back and put him in there. You want to? Well, I trust you.
I'm on the right one.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, so we should have him. We should have him in here. If you want to write that in, then remind me and I'll put it in there. You understand that I've never used this before. We just drew this up for this, and that's why I'm looking for any mistakes, okay? It says, for the Lord saw, in verse 26, for the Lord saw that the affliction of Israel was very bitter, whether bond or free, there was no helper for Israel. I'm telling you, they were in bad shape, okay? And the Lord did not say that he would blot out the name of Israel from under heaven, but he saved them by the hand of Jeroboam, the son of Joash. Now the rest of the acts of Jeroboam, all they did is might, how he made war, and how he recaptured for Israel from Damascus and Hamath what belonged to Judah, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel? So Jeroboam rested with his fathers, kings of Israel. Then Zechariah, his son, reigned in his place. Now here's my intent. Just let me stop and say this. My intent is not to try to explain all this to you. My intent is to get it in you. Okay? We just want to get the Scriptures in you to where you have a little insight of what's being talked about. Somebody stands up and preach, or you stand up and preach. Now you can draw, you know, you put it in there and the Holy Spirit can draw from that. He has more resources to draw from. And that's what our intent is. We're not going to get out on these tangents, okay? Then we get into chapter 15. It says, in the 27th year of Jeroboam, king of Israel, Azariah, the son of Amaziah, king of Judah, became king. He was 16 years old when he became king. Notice how young these guys are coming to the throne. And he reigned 52 years. That's a long reign right there. In Jerusalem, his mother's name was Jechaliah of Jerusalem. And he did what was right in the sight of the Lord, according to all that his father Amaziah had done, except that the high places were not removed. The people still sacrificed burnt incense on the high places. Now, do you think God doesn't like the high places? I mean, you remember, just think of how many times we've read that tonight. You see what I'm saying? I believe God's trying to convey a message. When he says worship in Jerusalem, that's what he means. Or we could say when he says worship in spirit, that's what he means. And he's not going to settle for anything less than spirit. It's not how high you jump, how loud you shout. Is it spirit? Excuse me?
When I was reading this all these times, I was thinking that they were still sacrificing and burning incense to other gods.
No.
That's what I was thinking.
No, not in Judah. Judah is still, for the most part, unlike with these kings that are doing right, they're worshiping God, they're just not worshiping God the way God said to. Sounds like the church today, doesn't it?
Was this Mount Gibeon?
It's a high place.
Well, wasn't that?
It was the most elite high place, if I understand it correctly.
That was going on in David's time, though, wasn't it?
No, Solomon. David, you're talking about Solomon. David pitched the tent in Jerusalem and worshiped God in Jerusalem, right? The Ark of the Covenant was in Jerusalem, and that's where David was. The tabernacle of Moses was at Gibeon. But you understand that at that point in time, God's name had not been placed. See, when Solomon built the temple, it wasn't until Solomon dedicated the temple and God appeared to him in the dream, and God said that he would honor that he would take up residence there as long as they obeyed him. See, his name started out in Shiloh. That was the first place. And then Shiloh was destroyed. God, remember the child named Ichabod? The glory of the Lord's departed? God left the thing. Well, ultimately that happened to Jerusalem as well. It happened with Solomon's temple. And then you find in... It happened with Herod's temple there after the death of Jesus, A.D. 70, I think it was, that Titus came in and wiped out that temple. In other words, God's name will rest there. It's just like the church. You know, God said start the church. Well, God said start it, God's name's on there. But let me tell you something. When you stop doing it God's way, God's name, he'll pull his name off of it. You can keep your name on as long as you want to. But when you stop doing it God's way, he's not going to hang around. He's going to go where he's welcome. You understand what I mean by that? In other words, if you want to control your services, he'll let you. He'll hang around till he finds out that you don't want him in the door and he couldn't get in with a crowbar. He comes by invitation. He doesn't force his way in. Okay? So I think we can glean from all this if we will. Yes. Okay.
Verse 4, and probably kind of what Kenny was asking, the high places that were not removed. You're saying the high places are not the same high places that the wrong kind of people went up to worship. You know what I'm saying? I know you talked about high places before where they worshiped that were supposed to be taken down at once. Am I right?
All right, think of it this way. There were high places for idol worship. But yet they are also, like Israel, was into much more idolatry than Judah, although some of Judah's kings got Judah into idolatry. But then when you got a good king to come in, he did away with the idol worship, But he didn't do away with the high places. You understand? They could still burn incense, offer sacrifice, but don't do it to Baal. Or don't do it to whomever. You see that?
But even though they were doing it to Jehovah, he still was not pleased with it in the high place.
No, because the bottom line is they turned it into a ritual. There's no spirit to it. You understand that, and I think we missed this, even under the law, it was still a spiritual thing and it was still a thing of faith. And I think we missed that because we put so much emphasis on the works. But the reason God wasn't pleased with their works is because they weren't stimulated by faith. They were just going through the dead formalism of keeping this, that, or the other. And then you see this in the Psalms with David. David had a revelation under the Old Testament. He said, it's not bulls and goats that God's interested in. He'd rather have our praise. I mean, he had a tremendous revelation under the Old Covenant. And you understand, we're talking about the second king. And he has this tremendous revelation of what God is wanting. And that's been violated. Well, the church has followed the same ritual. We come in and we're get our rules, our regulations, our doctrines, and all our little pet things, you know. And we put more emphasis on that than we do the Spirit of God. I mean, get into tremendous legalism. You know, it's don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. Well, you know, that's the law. And I promise you that that's not the way God's operating today. God's not operating with the don't do this. God's operating with the do this. And if you do this, you don't do the other. And the key is to be led by the Spirit. Now, how can you be led by the Spirit of God and go against God? You can't do it. If you're led by the Spirit of God, you're not going to violate God. I was teaching this last year, and a pastor got up and walked out of class. He challenged me in front of the class, which was a major mistake. But bottom line is, what he told me, he said, what you're doing is just giving people a license to sin. When you say that the church and his church had rules and regulations and all that, he said, we have to put rules and regulations on them. If we don't, the people will sin. And you're just giving them a license to sin. I said, people sin with or without a license. He didn't appreciate my humor. But I told him, I said, let me tell you something. You can impose your rules and regulations on them all the time. If you don't deal with the heart of the man, you haven't done anything. He's just not doing it externally in his heart. You may not murder the guy, but Jesus said if you hate him in your heart, you are a murderer. It's a spirit thing. It's not an external thing. You get the heart of man right, I promise you the body's going to do right. That's what it's about. And see, that's what you'll find with these kings. They didn't have a heart after God. But what does it say about David? Man, he had a heart after God. And because he had a heart after God, Israel prospered under his leadership. And I can promise you that if churches, if the oversight of that church will have a heart after God, and the church will agree with that, the church will prosper. If the leader of the nation has a heart after God and the nation will get behind that leader and follow that leader, the nation will prosper. I mean, that's just something that's going to happen. But the key is getting the heart after God. I was talking with a guy today, what's the difference between dictatorship and theocracy? The heart of the individual in the position. That's the difference. That just came out of my mouth as I was talking to him. I thought, hey, that was pretty good, you know. But that's the difference between theocracy and dictatorship, is whether or not the man in the oversight is following God or whether he's doing his own thing. Now, with all that in mind, let's get to verse 5. It says, then the Lord struck the king so that he was a leper until the day of his death. Now, which king are we talking about? Uzzah or Uzziah? Uzziah. Okay. Yep. Azariah. Huh? Not Amaziah.
J-A-R-I-A-H.
Tell you what, let's do.
What's right here on the spot?
Let's go over to, let's see. Let me look at a. Just give me a minute here. I'm look up a scripture reference. Be nice if I had my study guide run so I could look at that, wouldn't it? Let me just do this right now. Let me just jump ahead, okay? So we get this correctly, all right? Now we're talking about Azariah or Uzziah. Okay, king of Judah. Verse 5 says, the Lord struck him with leprosy, right? Now, turn over to 2 Chronicles, the 26th chapter, and you get some insight into what's being spoken of. Verse 16, 2 Chronicles chapter 26, and verse 16 says, but when he was strong, his heart was lifted up to his destruction. That's called pride. For he transgressed against the Lord his God by entering the temple of the Lord to burn incense on the altar of incense. Who could go into the holy place? The holy place. The priest. The holy of holies, only the high priest. But now the priest went in and burned incense daily. But no one but the sons of Aaron, see that's who the priests were, no one but the sons of Aaron could go into that tent. Didn't matter what your position was. Okay? You could go to the outer court, you could burn, you know, give your priest a sacrifice to burn on the brazen altar, but nobody but the sons of Aaron could go into the tent. Now, Uzziah takes it on himself to go into the temple, which is still the same difference, the same compartments, you understand, to burn incense in the holy place. So it says, so Azariah the priest... verse 17, so Azariah the priest went in after him, and with him were 80 priests of the Lord, valiant men. The holy place in the temple, pretty good size, right? And they withstood King Uzziah and said to him, it is not for you, Uzziah, to burn incense to the Lord, but for the priests, the sons of Aaron, who are consecrated to burn incense. Get out of the sanctuary, for you have trespassed. You shall have no honor from the Lord God. Now, I'm going to tell you something. As ministers of God, wherever God has anointed you in your authority, you better guard it with your life. Even if the king comes in, if he's not supposed to be there, then stand your ground. And you understand these men were risking their life because he could kill them. But there was a violation. They were protecting the house of God. Verse 19 said, then Uzziah became furious, and he had a censer in his hand to burn incense, and while he was angry with the priest, leprosy broke out on his forehead before the priest in the house of the Lord beside the incense altar. And Azariah the chief priest and all the priests looked at him, and there on his forehead he was leprous. So they thrust him out of that place. Indeed, he also hurried to get out because the Lord had struck him. King Uzziah was a leper until the day of his death. He dwelt in an isolated house because he was a leper, for he was cut off from the house of the Lord. Then Jotham, his son, was over the king's house, judging the people of the land. Now, with that in mind, you go back to this 15th chapter. In verse 7, well, let me just go back here to verse 6. I'll read 5 through it. Then the Lord struck the king so that he was a leper until the day of his death. So he dwelt in an isolated house, and Jotham, the king's son, was over the royal house, judging the people of the land. Now the rest of the acts of Azariah, or Uzziah, and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Judah? So Azariah rested with his fathers. They buried him with his fathers in the city of David. Then Jotham, his son, reigned in his place. We're talking about the same man. We're talking about the same man, aren't we? That's why it's so important not to just pick out one place in the Bible to read, but when you're going to study something, find out every place in the Bible that it's talking about and look at all of them and see if it's talking about the same incident, the same person, or whatever. You understand? It gives more insight. That's why you need to read the four Gospels. If you want insight into the life and ministry of Jesus, read all four Gospels, not just parts of them. And when you compare the parables, some people say, well, they contradict. No, they supplement. The Bible supplements itself. And you use the Bible to let the Bible be the teacher. You understand? Not word study and word definition. You do word study. You do word definition. But the Bible interprets itself. Word definition, word study won't interpret the Bible. All it does is the same as a Webster dictionary will do for the English language. It'll only tell you what the word means. But even in the English language, that word can have different meanings, and the context is what must be used to find out what that word means. For instance, head. In the Navy, the bathroom's the head. That's what they call it. I guarantee you better call it the head. Now, we know that this thing here on sitting on top of her neck's the head, right? But we also know that in corporations, they call the person over to the department the head. The head of the department or department head, right? Now, look that word up in the dictionary, H-E-A-D, and you'll find that whether it's talking about the head as a toilet, the head of the thing on your neck, or a department head, they're all spelled the same way. Well, how do you know which word is being used? The same thing holds true with the Word of God. That's why it is so important that you read the context, and then where you have multiple definitions of a word, then the context will tell you which of those definitions apply. All the definitions don't apply to the word every time it's used, just like all the definitions don't apply to head. This is my head. It's not a toilet, you understand. See what I'm saying? Get the picture, right? Well, we'll move along from that one, all right? Now, in verse 8, it says, in the 38th year of Azariah, king of Judah, Zechariah, the son of Jeroboam, king over Israel, and Zechariah, the son of Jeroboam, reigned over Israel in Samaria 6 months. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord as his fathers had done. I'm trying to hurry, because I'm going to have to go like a freight train to get this done, do the review and you get the test and all that. You do want to graduate, right? I want you to. He did evil in the sight of the Lord as his fathers had done. He did not depart from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who had made Israel to sin. Then Shalom, the son of Jabesh, conspired against him and struck and killed him in front of the people. And he reigned in his place. Now, you know, today when they assassinate a president or prime minister, they don't reign in their place, do they? They either get shot or put in prison or something like that. Then you just kill him and say, well, I'm going to take the throne. Now, the rest of the acts of Zechariah, indeed, they're written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel. This was the word of the Lord which he spoke to Jehu. Remember I talked to you about remembering the fourth generation? Saying, your son shall sit on the throne of Israel to the fourth generation. And so it was. This ended it. This ended the dynasty of Jehu right here. Isn't it interesting that God doesn't miss a cue? He'd tell you what's going to happen before it happens. You understand the prophet ministry does a lot of that. He can tell you what's going to happen before it happens or what should happen, what we should do. Think about it. Isn't that what they did with Saul? Samuel, isn't that what he told Saul? He told him, Saul thought he was looking for donkeys. He didn't know God had a setup going on, a divine appointment to where God was going to tell him he's to be the king. He didn't have a clue about being king. He thought he was out looking for donkeys. I'm going to tell you, God speaks things into your life. It doesn't mean you have to know everything, right? You don't understand it, put it on the shelf. Don't discard it. Don't throw it in the trash. Put it on the shelf, okay? It's there for a reason. And we play a large part in a lot of it coming to pass. Verse 13, Shalom the son of Jabesh became king in the 39th year of Uzziah. See, now it's called him Uzziah instead of Azariah. You see that? King of Judah, and he reigned a full month in Samaria. For Menahem, the son of Gadai, went up from Tirzah, came to Samaria, and struck Shalom, the son of Jabesh, in Samaria, and killed him, and he reigned in his place. Now we have two assassinations here, don't we? Now the rest of the acts of Shalom, the conspiracy which he led, indeed they're written in the book of Chronicles of the kings of Israel. Then from Tirzah, Menahem attacked Tiphsah, all who were there in his territory, because they did not surrender. Therefore he attacked it, and all the women who were with the child, he ripped open. In the 39th year of Azariah, king of Judah, Menahem, son of Gadai, became king over Israel and reigned 10 years in Samaria. So he lasted a little longer than a month. But what did he do? Evil. In the sight of the Lord, he did not depart all his days from the sins of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, and made Israel sin. You're going to find, if you look at the kings of Israel, that's just like a stuck record. Over and over and over, for those of you that know what records are, okay? Yes. Do you know what a record is? I'm impressed. Verse 19 says, Pul, the king of Syria, came against the land. Menahem gave Pul 1,000 talents of silver, that his hand might be with him to strengthen the kingdom under his control. Menahem exacted the money from Israel, from all the very wealthy, from each man 50 shekels of silver to give the king of Assyria. So the king of Assyria turned back and did not stay there in the land. Now you can look at this two or three different ways, okay? One way you can look at it, well, you know, he's just robbing from the rich. Or another way you can look at it, if you're a businessman, you're glad to give him 50 shekels because at least you still have your business. And if the Syrian king comes in and takes over, you may not have anything. So wasn't that bad a deal for them, I guess. Verse 21 says, Now the rest of the acts of Menahem and all that he did, are they not written in the book of Chronicles of the kings of Israel? So Menahem rested with his fathers, then Pekahiah's son reigned in his place. In the 50th year of Azariah, king of Judah, who's Azariah? Uzziah. Pekahiah, the son of Menahem, became king over Israel in Samaria and reigned 2 years. And he did what? Evil in the sight of the Lord, he did not depart from the sins of Jeroboam's son, Nebat, and made Israel sin. Then Pekah, the son of Remaliah, an officer of his, conspired against him and killed him in Samaria. In the citadel of the king's house, along with Argob and Ariah, and with him were 50 men of Gilead, he killed him and reigned in his place. Now the rest of the acts of Pekahiah and all that he did, indeed they are written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Israel. In the 52nd year of Azariah, king of Judah, Pekah, the son of Remaliah, became king over Israel in Samaria and reigned 20 years. He did evil in the sight of the Lord, did not part from the sins of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, and made Israel sin. In the days of Pekah, king of Israel, Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, came and took Ijon, Abel-Beth, Maacah, Genoa, Kadesh, Hazor, Gilead, and Galilee, all the land of Naphtali, and he carried them to Assyria. Now, I want you to look at this. The dynasty of Israel is coming to an end. Then Hoshea, the son of Elah, led a conspiracy against Pekah, the son of Remaliah, and struck him and killed him. You see how these one assassination after another. So he reigned in his place in the 20th year of Jotham, the son of Uzziah, or Azariah. Now the rest of the acts of Pekah and all that he did, indeed they're written in the book of Chronicles of the kings of Israel. In the second year of Pekah, the son of Remaliah, king of Israel, Jotham, the son of Uzziah, king of Judah, began to reign. He was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned 16 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Jerusha, the daughter of Zadok, and he did what was right in the sight of the Lord. He did according to all that his father Uzziah had done. However, the high places were not removed. People still sacrificed burned incense on the high places. He built the upper gate of the house of the Lord. Now, the rest of the acts of Jotham and all that he did, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Judah? In those days, the Lord began to send Rezin, king of Syria, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, against Judah. So Jotham rested with his father and was buried with his fathers in the city of David, his father. Then Ahaz, his son, reigned in his place. Okay? I'm going to stop there. We're at the end of chapter 15. We'll pick up with chapter 16. I did a lot of reading tonight, purposely, because I don't think that there's so much explanation as there is just foundation that needs to be given to you. And we're not asking you on the test to memorize the names of these kings, this type thing. So you can relax in all that. But what I want you to, the thing I do want you to know is Israel never, from the divided kingdom I'm talking about, where you had Israel and Judah, Israel never had a good king. Never. Okay? And you'll find that they're going into captivity to the Assyrians. Hoshea, we mentioned him a while ago, the last king of Israel. I think that's on your chart too, isn't it? Okay. He's the last king of Israel. Then Israel ceased to be a nation. And then you'll find later on that Judah goes into captivity. They ceased to be a nation. And then in 1948, what was it, May the 14th, Israel once again became a nation. God said they would. God doesn't miss a cue, you understand? I mean, if He says it, it doesn't matter how many hundreds of years. He brings it to pass.
Israel is the only nation that has ever been obsolete and then come back together, and the language is still with
it. To my knowledge. Some people say the Roman Empire is going to do that. A lot of your prophecy teachers, I'm not sure about that. I'll just tell you, I've got a thought. I couldn't prove it, but I don't know if they can prove theirs. So I don't preach mine. But I've got a thought on what that is. I've heard people talk about the rebuilding of Babylon. They talk about how Saddam Hussein's going to rebuild Babylon. I said, no, he's not. God says it won't be rebuilt. I believe God's bigger than He is. He's not going to rebuild it. When God says it's forever destroyed, it's forever destroyed. That's just the fact of life. And it's foolish to think that we're going to change the mind of God in those things or overthrow the power of God. Oh boy.
I can't find where it says anything about